Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg Williams, and you're right here at my home in the Medical Center, Texas Medical Center in Houston, Texas, one of the most awesome cities in the world. And the sun is so bright behind me, I had to pull the shades, and it's still burning through the shades, but hopefully that'll go behind the buildings and things will lighten back up inside of the penthouse here a little easier to make it more camera ready and savvy. But it's great to have you this evening. We're going to have a great program tonight. This is one that I've been looking forward to for several weeks. And every now and then you run across somebody, you meet somebody, you hope to get to a chance to collaborate with and speak with. And tonight's guest is one of those exact people. I have a lot of people on the show. We've been doing this for almost 5 years coming up August. And I love all our guests, but there's a few that I really, really, really hold in high esteem and respect. And our guest tonight is one of those because of not only her survivor story, but her thriver story, but also how she's going into the legislative world and helping make it better for so many other people that are going through and have gone through the very same thing. So we're going to hear all about her story and what she's doing and how she's helping and how you can experience some help this evening. You don't have to do this alone. Several ways to get involved tonight. Looking over here, we are live on Facebook, on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, and there's several people watching there. But you can call in at 888-627-6008, and our awesome host tonight is TJ at the BBS radio station. He'll be glad to patch you right on through to us this evening, to me and our guest. Or you can text me at 832-396-6525. And during the commercial break at the bottom of the hour, I'll be glad to check and make those comments or questions known. Or you can get right on Facebook. And looks like people are sharing tonight already, but they can get on there and comment, and we'll be watching that. And I believe my son in Seattle, Washington, in the United States Army, Curtis, is running that for us this evening. Before we get to our guest tonight, I got a package the other day right here. And inside it, BBS actually sent, which I just think is awesome, T-shirts, BBS radio T-shirts, that I will be proudly wearing around town, around Houston, to let everybody know who I'm affiliated with. And they sent me too. So I am thrilled. Thank you, Doug, Don, and TJ for the shirts. I am going to wear those proud because I am proud to be a part of your radio family. So thank you for sending those. And I'm going to be telling everybody about it while I'm wearing it out at Whataburger and all the restaurants and places downtown. I love to venture into and tell everybody about the wonderful BBS radio station. The programming that they have here is second to none. Before we get into our guest tonight, before she comes on to introduce her, I always like to preface just some things that I've been going through this week. And I saw an awesome movie, and I've already got things up in my head of how I'm going to make this into a presentation. And as I was watching it, it was unbelievable. It was just a little Pixar movie. I guess it's the number one movie out right now, but it's called Inside Out 2. And I saw that yesterday. And they bring in a new character in that movie called Anxiety. And the way they put this in a animated format is so absolutely scientific-based knowledge. I recommend everybody to go see it. See the first one first, because it'll let you know about all different emotions of what's going on inside of a person's mind. And then this number two that is out right now is second to none. It's really, really a good program. But it helped me understand a little bit more about how we need to deal with our own stress, our own anxiety, our own pressure, our own nervous system as things happen into our world. And just a couple of things I jotted down right before the program, I'm right here, is that I need to understand in my own week, in my own way, in my own manner, that I just simply cannot control everything. There's things out there in this world that I am not in control of. And so many times I get stressed out on not being able to control. My comfort zone in life is to be able to manage and control my life as much as possible. When I count steps, when I take the same route to the same location every time, when I get the same food at the same restaurant every time, or the way I lay out my clothes before, and I've already done that, before tomorrow, I have them all laid out on my bed and ironed and ready to go. That control sometimes allows me to be at peace, give a little rest in my anxiety state. But I need to understand that no matter how hard I try to control things, I simply can't control everything. And when I understand that, it gives me a little more sense of peace, because sometimes I want to control it all and it's just not possible. In that same wavelength, perfection doesn't exist. And I think even in a humorous way, in the two movies of Inside Out 1 and 2, they start understanding and recognizing that all of these emotions are necessary to make everybody appreciate each other's emotion. And I think having that understanding that perfection isn't a reality, it does not exist. So I need to understand that I need to do my best and know that sometimes my best is good enough, that it's not going to be perfect. I am a perfectionist. I like everything to be absolutely as aligned as it can, but I need to understand and recognize that's not going to be a reality. Also, I need to remember to breathe. Breathing is so important. It allows you the control. It allows you to get all your emotions back under control. And in my world, just taking that big breath in and out, it allows me time to refocus, which is important. Journaling my thoughts is important. Look what I got just a few minutes ago. Amazon came, and I've got three new journals because I absolutely journal out the kazoo, and I buy these everywhere I go, but I saw three of them on Amazon a couple days ago, and I ordered them. I put my thoughts, my emotions, I even audit myself periodically in these journals of saying, hey, what was I feeling like when I was tension-filled? And then I do a self-audit. What was going on around me? What time of the day was it? How did I feel? How did I decompress? How did I handle it? You know, all of those types of things. That I get a good night's sleep the night before, have I been eating well? And I start going through all of those to be able to recognize that there may be a few triggers, there may be a few road speed bumps, or detours, or exit lanes that I missed. And when I recognize those triggers, it may be able to help me understand. So if you have never tried it, get a journal, And please start writing your emotions down and getting it out of you, at least on paper, so you don't hold it all inside. Make sure you drink a lot of water. Try to limit any kind of caffeine or coffee, alcohol. You want to limit as much of that as possible. They only fuel the anxiety. And I truly believe that we carry two buckets, just like in relationships and arguments and uncomfortable conversations. Each person in their life carries two buckets, one of water, one of gasoline. And when we have that water, we're able to be able to put those little fires out to be able to keep ourselves hydrated, especially in this heat of that sun right there, what it's doing brutally in Texas right now, and I think all the way around the country. Also, make sure you eat well. Try to get some balanced meals, get that fluid and fuel and vitamins and nutrition inside of you, and then spend some time outside. Getting outside for 15, 20, 30 minutes a day helps you regulate. Just smelling, just enjoying, just feeling, just touching what God has allowed us to have in nature is huge. And don't be afraid to take some time out for yourself. Do something that helps you relax. And then the last thing I always want to let people know is when you're feeling tension, try to find somebody that you can trust. Personally, I like to put it down first in a journal, but then find somebody that you can trust and just share it with. Talk it out and feel free to be able to release those emotions. I always use this illustration. I don't want to belabor it, but some days I feel like a 2 liter of soda and I'm being shaken up and I'm just waiting for somebody to do the wrong thing or say the wrong thing. And I unscrew that cap and I just spew all over them. That's not the way to be. I need to allow myself those avenues and those ways to be able to de-stress and let loose of some of that anxiety that I have built up inside of me. Just a few thoughts as we go into the program tonight. And I hope one or two of those things help you sometime this week. And maybe our guest tonight, I'm sure, is going to be able to have some wisdom to be able to share with us. And we may start off with that. So Rhonda Kirkendall is a new friend of mine. She is a survivor leader, a speaker that is second to none. I heard her at a United Against Human Trafficking gala event, a luncheon. And she just literally blew everybody away with her presentation. She is a consultant and, listen to this, a legislative advocate. She holds a bachelor's degree in political social work and pursuing her master's degree at the University of Houston Graduate School of Social Work. And listen to all these boards. I could read this, but it just goes on and on and on. But she serves on the Survivor Advisory Board for the Texas Association Against Sexual Assault, as well as a member of the Texas Human Trafficking Survivor Leader Council. She's working as an anti-child trafficking consultant for the Texas CASA and is implementing anti-traffic protocols in CASA programs across the state. And I can keep going on, but I just want to welcome her to the program this evening, Rhonda Kirkendall. Rhonda, can you hear me tonight?
I can hear you, Dr. Williams.
Hey, good to have you and welcome from your new home right here into the program tonight. And the background looks awesome. Welcome.
Yes, I wanted to thank you so much for inviting me to come on. I'm going to tell you, I watched about a 2-hour training from you. And so many times as a survivor of trafficking, I watch these trainings and I'm yelling at the screen, no, that's not right. Everything that you said in this training was spot on. And I knew then that I wanted to be your friend. And so that time we spent on the phone was so very precious. So I'm really excited to be here tonight and chat with you a little bit.
Well, we've had a lot of, since I put this out on different social networks and pages letting know it was going to happen, I've had people over and over and over text me and say, oh, we can't wait because they've heard about you, they've heard a little bit of your story. And what I really want to do tonight is give you all the time that you want in the program to be able to share your story. But then also, I want you to help us understand how important the legislative side of this is. And I'm sure you've heard this, but let me just start off with this past week. A minister up in the Dallas area resigned from a huge megachurch, over 100,000 member megachurch up in Dallas. And because of the statute of limitations, when this happened, he had sexually abused what he called a young lady, but come to find out was a 12-year-old girl, child, for about 4 years. But because of the statute of limitations, nothing can happen to him legally. Explain to me what those statute of limitations are and how you got involved, your story, and how it kind of put you and projected you into this legislative work that is so important right now. Just share
with
us.
I have seen the story of the Dallas minister, and I think one of the most disconcerting things is how important language is. Yeah. And over media has been using this terminology of a relationship. And I beg people to be very careful about using that type of language. So a statute of limitations is a limit of time that a victim can come forward, and actually prosecutors and district attorneys can press charges on certain crimes. So when I got involved in this for child sexual assault, a victim had 10 years from their 18th birthday. So if you turn 29 years old, you were too late. There's nothing you can do. There is something called tolling the statute of limitations. And I did everything I could to do that as well. And I was unsuccessful at every single roadblock that I tried to find the police record. And I found hospital records. I found CPS records. I found court documents where I gave the name of my perpetrator and we fell through the cracks. And so that's what made it so difficult, is I told people and nobody listened to me. And then when I had the strength to come forward, I was 34 years old. My children were getting close to be older to where the age I was when I was victimized. And I was victimized at 10 years old. And so all of that kept me thinking, why have I not done anything? He's still out there. And so that's really what got me engaged in working in this process. Throughout getting my degree in social work, I learned so much more about human trafficking. And what I learned was that my story was a very common story of victimization. You know, when you are vulnerable to trafficking, it usually means you have a hard life. You come from a hard place to begin with. So my parents were actually forced to marry because my father got my mother pregnant. And there was tremendous amounts of domestic violence. To this day, my brain does not let go of a play-by-play of several of things that I witnessed. And so those have always stayed with me as well, watching that. When my father would beat up my mom, he would grab me and we would be on the run. And so we were on the run for a week, a month, one time it was a year. And so I was living alone, my father, separate and apart from my sisters and my mom. That's when a lot of the sexual abuse happened. The first time I was ever raped, I was 8 years old. So what I learned in studying human trafficking is previous experience with sexual abuse makes you more vulnerable to trafficking. So by the time I was 10 years old, my trafficker walked up to me at my dad's apartment and said, "Do you want to be a model?" And even though I was 10 years old, I still remember how excited I was to hear that. Of course I do. And so after a very brief conversation with my parents, he was given unlimited access. So I lived in Fort Bend County. I still live in Fort Bend County today. I'm in a little town. Well, we're not so little anymore, in Fulshear. So my trafficker would come to Fort Bend County, pick me up and take me into Houston. And we would spend weekend trips where being traveling into Houston. Eventually, I was flown. So I was flown out on a Friday, returned on a Sunday, and sitting back in my seat at my elementary school on Monday morning. And I never told anyone. I kept Wow. silent. And the way that he kept me silent was because he said, everything that I'm doing, everything that we're doing, that's what models do. And if you tell anyone about this, they're going to know it's your fault. So that kind of logic, so many times when we hear something like that, you're like, well, that's unbelievable. Who would believe that? A 10-year-old would. So many times we're looking at this through the mind of an adult when you have to realize I was 10 years old. And so I kept silent for a very, very long time until I was grocery shopping in 2003. And I ran into another man that sexually assaulted me as a kid. I didn't have my kids with me. And so I immediately walked up to him and I said, is your name? And I gave him his name. And he said, yes. And all I said to him was, do you remember me? I'm Janine's daughter. I didn't give him my name, which I think is really interesting. I just used my mom's name. Immediately, his face went white. And he said, that's not me. That's my brother. You're getting me confused. And he made a beeline for the checkout lane. And I remember the only emotion that I had at that moment was I had to get out of the grocery store before he did. And I didn't. He got out before me. So I'm 34 years old, standing in the front of a Walmart grocery store with a cart full of groceries. And I was paralyzed. I could not walk out of that store. And the best way I can describe it to you is I was afraid that I couldn't scan for safety. I wouldn't know where he is when I walked out. And then that second emotion was I was angry with myself. I've always been hard on myself. When you're talking about perfectionism, I can so resonate with what you're saying. Because my second emotion was, you have worked so hard to overcome this. Why are you paralyzed now? Why is this happening to you again? Why can't you escape it? And a week later, I got a call from my mother who told me that she was going to his funeral. He committed suicide a week after confronting him in Walmart. And it probably took, I told my mom everything that happened and it took her about 30 seconds. And here's the words she said to me. She said, it had nothing to do with you. His wife left him and he didn't have a job. So I'm going to the funeral in support of his family. And my mother went to his funeral. And, you know, now the work that I do, I find that kids are so resilient. And I feel that I've had a harder time in my life coping with not having a support system from my family than what any male perpetrator has ever done to me. And so that's what's been so very difficult. And that's also what started me to say, I now have to find what I call the worst of the worst. That's what led me to find my perpetrator and to do something about it when I didn't have my day in court.
Wow. I tell you what, how do you find that depth of resistance? Because I believe resiliency, because I believe resiliency is already in us. You just have to discover it. You don't learn it. It's there. How did you tap into that of saying, hey, I'm going to be strong. I'm going to go look for him. I'm going to do this and nothing's going to hold me back. Where did that come from?
You know, there's a statistic out there that talks about if somebody just has one person that's a mentor, one person that believes in them. And I can honestly tell you that one person for me was my husband. And even to this day, it's hard for me not to say it without getting emotional. I met him when I was extremely young. I married him when I was 16. I was 16, he was 19, and we've been married for 38 years.
Wow.
And he was the first person that was a safe place for me. And that actually showed that I had value and worth. When I decided to come out and go public and change this law, the first thing he said was, how can I help you? Do I need to contact the county commissioners? Do I need to contact the judges? Like, you tell me what we need to do to get this law passed. What he didn't realize when he said that to me was the way that I read that was, you're not ashamed of me. It's not my fault. And that's nothing that he intended, but just being who he is as a person. And it's the same thing when I decided to go back to school in 2021. Immediately, I think that's a fabulous idea. You know, chase your dreams and go for it. And so, you know, my younger sister and I, we always joke that if we would have grown up in a stable home environment, we would all be brain surgeons. So,
how important was that to you, Rhonda, to have the person that the closest to, because that is a vulnerable place to be. because he probably didn't know about your past when you got married, or did he?
Yes, he's
He
the
did.
only person. He's the only person that actually knew everything, like everything from the very beginning. So, I mean, it's yeah, it. I think you underestimate having a support system around you, and that's why somebody asked me one time why I do what I do, and it's because I have gone through something that was horrific, but I also wouldn't change it. I don't know who I was supposed to be before it happened. But I know who I am now. And maybe before this happened, I wouldn't have been happy. I wouldn't have been passionate about the field that I work in. But I come with a lived experience working in social justice advocacy, and that's a very unique place to be. And I do feel blessed because other survivors haven't been given the opportunities that I've been given. And that's why that comes with a responsibility to try to pave a better path for other people that come after me. And that's where that perfectionism is kind of debilitating at times too, because we are so hard on ourselves. My husband told me one time, he said, "I wish you could see yourself through the eyes of other people. The way other people see you, you're way too hard on yourself." And so, yeah, he's been the strong. I say that the longer that we're married, we're almost becoming the same person. Although
Wow.
we're very different, we are very different. I'm more of a creative, and he's an engineer. So.
Yeah. I have a sticky note on my desk right above the computer screen that says something on the order of, "I'm glad I went through what I have gone through because it made me who I am today." And what we endure isn't something because it took me 35 years plus to let anybody know. And I was just faking. But you having that partner beside you that's new, wow, what a blessing that is.
Well, and you know, I always said too that we can find tons of therapy and support groups for survivors. We need support groups and therapy for people that are married to survivors. You know, a group that can get together and say, "This is what we're going through." I mean, there was a period in my life where we couldn't stay at a hotel. I couldn't stay in a hotel. And I was too afraid to tell him. So I would wait till he went to sleep and I would leave the room. I would stay down in the lobby all night long because I couldn't go to sleep. You know,
Because of
nobody,
trigger.
yeah, the majority of my abuse happened in hotels. So yeah, and to be honest with you, before I really went and got therapy, I didn't even understand that. It was more of an emotion and a feeling that I really couldn't process. I just knew how I felt and I needed to escape the room. Now I know that even if I start to feel like that, I can identify what it is. I know what it is. And so it's easier to work through that. And you know, even, you know, Tommy took me back to Lubbock where I was flown. We found the hotel that I was taken to. We went to the rooms that I was taken in. And so we've done all that together through growing through this.
Wow, and Rhonda, how do you, when you start to process this, and work through it, do you journal? Do you share these things down on paper, or what is it that helps you maintain that level of where you need to be at of stability to be able to keep somewhat sanity inside of our minds? How do you do that? What would you add to the list of things that I mentioned earlier, of how to keep everything somewhat controllable?
Yeah, I very much resonate with what you said about the journaling. I don't journal now, probably because I've been in school and so I've got all these papers to write. So it's like, how can I journal? But when I went through the darkest part of coming out and trying to decide what I was going to do, I did journal a lot. And it astounds me that when I go back and read it, I'm like, wow, it was a lot harder than what I remembered. It was a lot darker than what I remembered. I questioned everything in my life. I questioned God. There was one point where I wrote in a journal that I couldn't understand how I had watched a nest of birds being born outside my kitchen window. And I watched the mom and dad bird come all day long and feed that baby. And I remember being angry at God, thinking, "You gave this innate desire for a bird, and we were thrown to the wolves." And it just seems so unfair, unjust. And it's just, it's a journey and it's a process. And through this healing, you never get over it, but you do get better. And what's weird for me is I even remember, I can't tell you the day and the time, but I remember walking out on my back patio in full shirt. And I remember looking out at the sun, thinking out loud, there are more good people in the world than bad people. I had to say that out loud. And then I realized, like, all of the people that I work with in this field, there has been good and bad, evil since the beginning of time. But the people that are working in this field to make it better are also tremendous. And so good people find good people. And I felt extremely blessed that I'm able to work in this field and meet people like you. I mean, and that's where I started to kind of start, the anxiety started to dissipate when I did realize everybody in the world is not out to get you.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to scan for safety every time I walk into a room. And, you know, I mean, I even had issues physically where my shoulders would always be up in my neck. All day long, I would have to constantly say, release your shoulders, because I found that my entire body was constantly tense without me knowing it, because I didn't know what relaxed felt like.
Wow. Tell you what, 888-627-6008. We're going to take our only short break. It's about 69 minutes or 69 seconds long, so it won't be very long. On the other side of this, Rhonda, I want you to kind of finish your story, how this legislation and your perpetrator and all that kind of ended up, and then what you're doing in the legislative work now, and how people that are listening tonight that may need help, what kind of wisdom that you have for them. We're going to talk about that and a lot more on the other side of this break. Hang with us, 888-627-6008, and we'll be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Good evening and welcome back. We have Rhonda Kirkendall. It's an unbelievable story, and she's been sharing that and the work that she's been doing in this field ever since and making an impact on so many people. And Rhonda, on as your story progresses and you were hunting your perpetrator and all those items, was there anything that you wanted to share as far as how that all ended and came full circle with your perpetrator? And maybe the reason you got involved in the legislation.
Sure. So what ended up happening is, I told you, like, we had already told all of these people and it fell through the cracks. When I confronted this man in the local Walmart, I decided I was finally going to go to the police. My tracker actually gave me with a memento. He gave me a scrapbook and the inside cover said, "Love you, Pumpkin, Mark Turner." And so it had his inscription. I knew his name. I also, for 40 years, I kept my luggage tag from being flown, and a heart that I had to keep from Southwest Airlines. That heart was completed by my trafficker. It gave his name, his home address, his driver's license number. It had all of his information in it. So that's how I was able to find him when I went to the Pasadena Police Department. That day, I found out that he has been convicted 4 times in 3 different states, in Texas twice. His last conviction was 1991. And his crimes are involved sexual performance by a child, promotion of prostitution, aggravated sexual assault, But what isn't listed there is trafficking. And the reason why is because when I was going through what I was going through, we didn't have the language to describe what was happening to us. At the federal level, the Traffic Victims Protection Act was not enacted until 2000. Here in Texas, it didn't follow suit until 2003. So if you think about it, we couldn't even explain what was happening to us back then. And so I found him in prison, and then I found out I couldn't press charges. And so, and I say that simply, it was a long drawn out process of me trying to find a way to press charges and being told no. And so I thought, okay, well, I don't want this to happen to anyone else. And so what can I do? And it immediately came to my mind to abolish the statute of limitations for child sexual assault. Naively, I bought a lobbying 101 book and I marched myself to Austin. And I failed miserably because I had no idea what I was doing. It took me 5 years over two legislative sessions. And we abolished the statute of limitations in the state of Texas back in 2007. I also knew that I would not know when my bill actually took effect. Because if you think about it, at that time, it was 10 years from your 18th birthday. So I knew it would take decades before finding out. 2022, just 2 years ago, I was sitting on my couch in my living room and I got a Facebook message. And all of a sudden, I just started crying. My husband's like, "What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong?" I'm like, "No, they're happy tears. They're happy tears." I got a Facebook message and it said, "You don't know me, but I know you. And because of the work you did so many years ago, I had my day in court." And so she was the why, the person that I was working to, that I never even imagined that I would get to know who it is. And there have been times when I've been into the courtrooms and stuff dealing in, you know, advocating in other capacities. And I'll hear the judge give the jury these instructions and say, there is no statute of limitations on child sexual assault. And I literally want to look around and go like, I did that. Like I did, you know what I mean? It's like this surreal emotion. Like the work that you did has such lasting effect when you work in legislation. If it would have happened the way that I wanted it to happen, I wanted to have my day in court. I would have been allowed to do that, I wouldn't have gone on to do what I'm doing today. I would have gone on and changed a law. So in essence, by being told no at every single avenue, it was hard then, but now I can see the beauty in the message. And that is, there's something more for you to do, to not help you, but to help all these people that may come after you. And for me, that was extremely impactful. And that's the reason why I work in human trafficking legislation today.
Well, with this story that we talked about at the opening of the program, but this ministry, that's in the state of Texas, correct? There is no statute of limitations now?
There is not, on child sexual assault.
Okay. So the case that this came up in, because it happened, even though he lives in Texas, it happened in Indiana. Obviously, Indiana has a different state code that allows him not to be prosecuted.
It goes by what the law was when the crime occurred. It's not retroactive. So even if it would have happened in Texas, if it would have happened way back then, it was what the law is when it happened. And so that's what's so limited about it. It wasn't retroactive.
Now, is there any way that you have plans to get that corrected, or is that as best as it's going to be?
You know, moving legislation is kind of like playing a football game. You want to just, yeah, move it by yards, right? If you try to get the whole thing at the you know, run for the touchdown in the first play, first down, you're not going to get it. And so we have tried to keep moving all of these different parameters. What we looked at was a window. We said, okay, we don't want to abolish it all the way outright, but for victims of these crimes, can we give a 2-year window for them to come forward and then close it? So those are the baby steps that we're trying to do. And, you know, I know it's really difficult because the argument against abolishing it is, with the passage of time, there is less evidence, less ways to prove it. And it's what makes it more difficult in a court of law. One of the only district attorneys that would help me when I worked on mine was a Fort Bend County District Attorney, John Healy. And what in my case, I had all this evidence, you know, and so I didn't, and it kind of, my story is so long, it's hard to go into all of it. But when my perpetrator was first released from prison on parole, it took him 3 weeks and he sent me a threatening email. In the email, he talked about what he did to me. He talked about how he never worried about getting caught due to the consensual nature of our contacts. I was 10 and he was 24 at that time. And then he also talked about how here in America, we demonize sex. And until we stop doing that, we're going to have the same problems, the aberrations that I engaged with Rhonda. So it's almost like blaming society for what he did. And I was not his only victim. There were, in fact, I'm in contact with several of his victims on through Facebook. And so there were so many of them that whenever we were mixed up in the child pornography ring, he would buy us lingerie, but that lingerie we had to leave there for the kids that were coming in after us. So it was an entire like child pornography ring.
Well, and I tell you, your story to me was so fascinating because you mentioned it earlier that you've heard human trafficking survivors and speakers, and sometimes they go on the different avenue of where you go, okay. But when I hear your story, you have everything up on the screen. Here's the picture. Here's the luggage tags. And everything is so documented. Probably that prosecutor was like, wow, it doesn't get any better than this. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and well, to be quite honest with you, that's also very extremely sad because although my
Yeah.
perpetrator was never convicted for what he did to me, he has been convicted before, and so I do have that. For the majority of victims of this kind of crime, they will never see their day in court. They will never see their trafficker even convicted of harm to anybody. Not too long ago, one of the hardest things I had to do was like this past May, I had to travel to El Paso. So his parole was revoked when he sent me that threatening email. He spent 10 years in prison and he was released again in 2016. He just recently violated his parole again. And this time the parole board said, guess what, Rhonda, you can come and sit in on this hearing. So I traveled to El Paso May of last year and I sat 10 feet from him for about an
Oh,
hour and a half. I was
how
the
hard
only
was that, Rhonda?
Room. It was very hard. I was the only person in the room that could not speak. I was told that if I said a word, that I would be kicked out. So I had to sit in silence. And, even with all of the therapy and the work that I do, the best way I can describe it is it's like my head knew how I was supposed to feel, but my body was not following suit. And it took me about 4 days. At the time, also, I was in the middle of college. I didn't have the luxury of just staying home. And, so it took me about 4 days to kind of recalibrate and think, okay, you're going to be okay. And then it took another 5 months. And I found out in October that his parole was revoked again. He's gone back to prison and he will be eligible for parole again in 5 years. So I know that I had that 5-year window. And then Crime Stoppers of Houston contacted me and said, do you want to be the first trafficking sexual assault survivor to do a parole video? You never have to talk to a parole board again. We have a program, we have a grant where you can come into our office and we will have a professional recording. You say everything you want to say to a parole board. When it's time for him to come up again, we will take this video for you. You do not have to go do that again. That also was when I left Crime Stoppers of Houston that day, I think I heard birds singing. I mean, it was just this tremendous weight that was lifted that I don't have to go do this again. I had already determined on my trip home from El Paso that I'm not going again. I was not going to go again. Now, knowing my personality, in 5 years, I would be heading there again. But at that time, it was just really hard to face him off because I wanted him to look at me so bad, and he would not look at me.
So you already have videotaped,
I do. I have it done.
and then if he comes up and when he comes up for parole again, they will run that video. Here it is, for the
Yes.
parole board to be able to say, nope, go back. We're not letting you out yet.
Yeah. And if you really think about the effects of parole hearings on victims of crime, I work with a lot of survivors that are in direct services, executive directors, counselors, professionals. We are in all professional fields out there. So we are thriving and doing well. And then we get a call that says, hey, you need to come talk to the parole board. We don't know them. It's complete strangers. And then we have to prove to them that we are damaged enough to keep our perpetrator back in prison. So it's this dichotomy where you're constantly looking back and you're not moving forward. Before you are forced to engage in the criminal justice system, you have no idea how hard it is. In 1991, he was given a 40-year sentence. And I thought, oh, he's given a 40-year sentence. Let me add 1991, 40 years. That's how long he's going to be in prison. That's not the way it works in Texas. That's not the way it works in pretty much every single state in the United States. For even 3G offenders, and those are the rapists, the murderers, the traffickers, they are eligible for parole whenever they serve 50% of their sentence.
Wow. Unbelievable. In this legislation that you have worked on, is there something that's getting ready to come up that you're working currently on in the next legislative session that's coming up? What's some of the things that you have your eyes on to be able to try to help and get past?
So every legislature's organized a little bit differently. Here in Texas, we are going to be kicking off the 89th legislative session in January 2025. And there are several things that we are working on to pass in this upcoming session. One of the things, there's something called the CID. It's Commercially Sexually Exploited Identification Tool. It is a universal validated tool for ages 10 and up to be able to screen for risk of sex trafficking. And so what we want to do is we want to see mandated screenings for kids that are in the child welfare system and also in the juvenile justice system. And we want it to be a universal screening, not just kids that we already suspect are victimized. That's one thing that we're going to be working on. Children at Risk has been working on that issue, so I'm working with them on that as well.
Okay, so this is going to be for the children that what you're hoping for, the children that are in child welfare and the juvenile system. What about the
I
foster
would
system?
that's child welfare system. That's the foster
Okay,
care
I'm
system.
with you. Okay.
I would love for schools to do it, but
Yeah.
that's far-fetched. That's the football. That's the fourth down. That's the touchdown, right? Because we know that, all these kids are in schools and that's something that could be done there as well. But for right now, we're trying to say for the population of kids in foster care, this child welfare, juvenile justice does a really good job of it. And the child welfare system does some screening. They do some screening in five of the largest counties in Texas. What we want to do is see it at all kids, universal screening 10 and up. And that's what we want to see happen. And we're really only going to get that if we do it statutorily.
And what's
Another
that
thing
look
that,
like, Rhonda? What's that
well,
screening look like?
so it is about, I think that there's eight topics, there's eight areas, and you do not ask the child the question. You gain this information from their case files, their doctor's notes. You're not quizzing a child to find out if they are at risk. Once you do the screening tool, you'll come up with what's called a no concern, a possible concern, or a clear concern. A clear concern in the state of Texas will allow that child to get services from the governor's child sex trafficking team. And those are through what are called CSAE, that's Commercially Sexually Exploited Youth Advocate Agencies. Those CSAE agencies cover about 95% of the state of Texas, and we're a big state. And so those are the services that are provided to victims that actually are, score that clear concern. But then we say, what about with a possible concern? Isn't it just as important to work upstream in preventative care to prevent abuse from happening in the first place? So
Yeah.
now we're also working on that as well. And there's a human trafficking nonprofit by the name of Unbound Now, and they are located in different areas of Texas, but they have a program that's devoted to just possible concerns on these CID screenings. And so there is a lot of work to be done. There's a nonprofit by the name of Allies Against Slavery. They house what's called Lighthouse, and Lighthouse is who does all of the CID screenings in the state of Texas.
Now, is this all about trafficking or is this about sexual abuse? Because there's a fine line there. Because did your dad sexually abuse you, or it was more neglect and the way that you guys ran away after he domestically hurt your mom? Because you got involved through that, correct?
I did. I did. I would say it was more than neglect. And the reason why my dad, when he took me, it was never because he wanted to take care of me. It was one way to hurt my mom, right? So when he took me, I was all different ages, oldest probably around eight the last time he took me when we were gone for a year. And when he took me, I was basically surviving on my own. Like he was gone. There was one instance where he would drop me off at a movie theater. I still remember what it was. It was The Cat from Outer Space. I don't know if you remember that movie.
I do remember that Walt Disney Cat from Outer Space, absolutely.
He dropped me off at a movie theater, and then he went to a bar, got into a fight, and got thrown in jail, and didn't come and pick me up. And it was a movie theater in Pasadena, Texas. And there was a Kip Big Boys. In fact, I have the Kip Big Boys. I don't know if you remember him. He has like the swirly hair and the red and white overalls. There was a restaurant right next to the movie theater. And there was an older man that came over, and he asked me if I needed help. And he took me over to that restaurant, and he bought me a hot chocolate. And he called my grandmother until my grandmother came to pick me up. He was always like this one person that helped me that I don't even know who he is. Like,
Wow.
if I ever had like a genie wish, it would be to get to know who that man was,
That's
because he did
amazing.
show me kindness in a time when I just didn't feel it as a kid.
Tell you what, this hour has flown by, Rhonda. Is there anything that you want to share with in the last minute or two of what you're doing and what's happened, what advice you have for people, the hope that if somebody is involved, enduring it right now, what wisdom you have, if you could talk to them face to face, eyeball to eyeball, what would you have to say to them on it?
I would say reach out. Reach out if you don't feel comfortable like reporting it to the National Human Trafficking Hotline. Reach out to one person that you can trust and talk to them. Talk to them about it. And if they don't listen, find another trusted adult. Luckily for me, in the state of Texas and pretty much the entire country, my story most likely wouldn't happen today, because today we have what are called children advocacy centers. So when children make outcries, they get forensic interviews in a very healthy, safe environment all across our country. It wasn't that way back then. And that is part of the reason why I work with those organizations today, because I know firsthand what happens when you don't have them. Legislatures are all created differently, state by state, but it isn't as daunting as people make it out to be, right? I mean, when you think of the Capitol, it always like it's something that we don't really understand. And I hear things like frustrating and daunting, and I don't want to get involved in politics. And I love working in human trafficking legislation because I am an extremely purple person. I do not care what party you are tied to. If you work in human trafficking legislation, you are my person. And that's kind of the way that I focus in on things. And so what I would say to get involved in legislation here in the state of Texas, you can vote in support of a bill from the privacy of your own home on your computer. You can do it at work on the House side. The Senate side, they still make you come up to the Capitol and sit all day long, but you can help move legislation. And we have a Facebook group, it's called Our Voice in Texas, that we use to help people engage with the legislative process here in Texas. But if you're not in Texas and you still want to get involved, look up your legislature online. And in this upcoming legislative session, find a bill that you absolutely are passionate about and watch it. Watch it go through the process. See when it's coming up for a hearing. Go to the hearing. You may be surprised that you are even strong enough to give a committee testimony. It's usually about 3 minutes. Get engaged and work through the process. I can tell you can read tons of books on how to move legislation, but until you go and do it, it doesn't really click. Once you get engaged with that, then it kind of clicks for you.
That's great. What last minute, what are you doing with Netflix? Tell me about that real quick.
So we're doing a taping. There's a lot of discussion right now about legalizing prostitution. And we're having a roundtable discussion of what would it look like if we legalized prostitution in this country, not in the state of Texas, but in this country. And it's a misnomer if you think just because we legalized it, the harm doers, the perpetrators, traffickers are going to miraculously disappear. They're still going to be there. In fact, it's going to increase demand. And when you increase demand, it's going to increase the demand for sex from children. And so it's this misnomer. When you look scientifically and you look at data and statistics, and you realize that the majority of people that are involved in the sex trade have come from really difficult places that have histories of domestic violence, sexual abuse, and that this is the way that they have been. And I can say this from lived experience, it's normalized for us. We don't know that it's wrong. I remember being in my early 20s and saying something and not knowing that it was wrong, but watching the reaction that somebody had when I said it.
Yeah.
That was okay. I said something wrong. Now I need to back up and correct it. And that's just the way it is for us. This is normalized behavior because this is what we grew up in.
So that's what this taping is of the panel that's going to be on Netflix is of that discussion.
There would be parts of it on there. So yes, we are doing the taping for it. Yeah.
Wow, fantastic. Rod, I can't thank you enough. Fascinating, unbelievable work. What's your husband's first name?
Tommy.
Tommy, make sure you let him know. Thank you for sharing you with us tonight and our listening audience. And thank him for being such a cheerleader and supporter of yours. You're doing wonderful work and you are a champion. Not only our state, but you're affecting so many people. Thank you, and I applaud you. Keep doing that work. You are a light to a very dark world, and we need more people like you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so
appreciate
much.
Appreciate you being here. Anytime you want to come back, you come back on and we'll talk.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, thanks, Ron. Looking forward to collaborating with you in the future, near future. Very much so.
Yeah.
Thanks again. As we do each and every week, I always like to close the program with the same type of message. No matter what Rhonda shared with her life, look at her now. There's hope. No matter what you're enduring right now, going through, experiencing, or even going to be facing tonight or tomorrow, never give up on that four-letter word that's called hope. It's there. Find somebody to drop an anchor into that you can trust. Talk. Share, get help. If you can't find that, 832-396-6525, text me and I will be right there. And we'll get you some resources and try to help you out, just chat with you and speak with you. But never assume you have to do this alone. There's people out there wanting to reach out and help you. And there's champions like Rhonda. Few that are as awesome as her, but there's champions like her that are willing to be able to help also. Thank you for joining us this week. Next week, we have Eugenia Valencia, part two. She was the young lady that was born as an infant in a Russian prison and sent off to the side to die. And she didn't die. And she has an unbelievable story. We're going to see the second half of that, hear all about that next week right here. Join us for another edition of Breaking the Silence, live from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome week, and never give up on hope. Have a good night. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.